Hello to all our listeners. You are on the MIR podcast section, and today we are receiving Dr. Gloria Mark. Hello, Gloria. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Dr. Mark is an American psychologist and researcher. She is Chancellor's Professor of Informatics at the University of California, Irvine. And Dr. Mark wrote a book called Attention Span, a Groundbreaking Way to Restore Balance, Happiness, and Productivity. First of all, I wanted to know where you got the idea to write a book about this subject, because even though the book was released in 2023, some of your research date back to a lot sooner than that. And today we hear a lot about attention span, focus decline, and all of that. But a few years back, not a lot of people were already worried about this. So how did it come to you?
Yeah, so I have been studying attention with our devices for about 20 years. And I had been giving talks to various kinds of groups, and there was a lot of public interest. And in particular, people were reporting to me that they felt they were having a lot of trouble with distractions, with keeping their attention focused when they were using their computers. They talked about how their smartphones were interfering with their ability to do other tasks. So, this had been a topic I had been thinking about for many, many years. And why I decided to publish it now was I just felt the time was right, because I had collected over 20 years of research and learned a lot, and I just thought this is the time, because people's concerns are quite big.
Yes, and one of the main subjects that are going on at this moment is the so-called TikTok brain and the effect that social media and all of these fast platforms have on us. And you say in your research that we spend only about 47 seconds on any screen on average. I want to know, is this to you, is this what explain why social media platforms such as TikToks are so su successful? Because it is fast and entertaining on a platform designed to gain our attention with short content.
I think that's right. I do think it's part of it. Yes. So, social media constrains our attention so that we're watching things in very short snippets. So TikTok videos, they can be longer. Most of them are about 15 seconds. So they're changing every 15 seconds. Twitter, which is now called X, constrains our character limit, so that, we can't write a lot of text. Instagram also tends to have short posts and images. So all of these social media platforms are constraining our attention. And I do think that a big part of why they're successful, it's not the only reason, but it's a part of the reason why they are, is because we can get information in very short chunks.
Okay. And on kind of the same subject or a similar subject, there's kind of a race to entertainment these days. And in your introduction, you say something that really stuck with me. That is, quote, "When you are immersed in the world's largest candy store, it is hard to resist sampling the wares," end of quote. Do you think there's too much going on? There's this race of entertaining, and would it slash should it be beneficial for us to just get a little bored sometimes instead of always being stimulated, not only by social media, but also you talk a lot in your book about emails and a lot of things that are happening in our screens all the time?
I do think that we have far too much stimulation in our current society. I'm not sure I would call it that being bored should be the solution, because when people are bored, they tend to have negative affect, negative emotion. I think it's more a matter of putting our attention to things that are quieter, that aren't changing as fast. For example, you take a walk in nature, right? Take a walk in the park. There's a lot of things to pay attention to. You're not going to be bored walking through a park, right? But it's, we have agency to be able to choose what we want to look at, what we want to focus on, or internally what we want to think about. And that's very different than sitting in front of a screen where we've got incoming notifications. We, as you say, sitting in front of the candy store, we have strong temptations to be able to look up anything. You have something that pops into your mind, an idea, and within milliseconds, really within milliseconds, we can, check the answer to that question we have. And we get used to this, and we're switching our attention so fast. We are, whether it's our choice or whether it's information that's being sent to us, right? There's a lot of attention switching going on. So yes, I think it would be very beneficial for people to learn to be able to appreciate their time away from devices. And it's another kind of entertainment, so to speak, if you want to use that word, entertainment, to simply be silent, or to be in nature, or to have a conversation with a friend. There's a lot of ways that we can be
Disconnect.
disconnect, but also to be stimulated without being on screens. And it's a different kind of stimulation. It's more of a thoughtful kind of reflective kind of stimulation.
Okay. Yeah, also I wanted to talk about quarantine, and I feel that a lot of people feel like the COVID crisis and lockdown was a real shift in the way that we consume technologies. What impact has the quarantine and the working from home or the hybrid work phenomenon has had on our ways of working and so on our mental health? Have you noticed in your research a kind of a change or a shift from that time on?
Yeah, so we have done some studies on this, and first of all, people report greater feelings of loneliness when they're working at home. So they don't have the social interaction that they had when they went into the workplace. So that's really important. Another aspect that's different is that people report different kinds of distractions. So when you're in a workplace, you can be distracted by ambient noise or other people coming up to your desk and talking to you, hearing telephones ringing, other people chatting. When people are at home, it's a different kind of distraction. People have reported being distracted by things in their personal environment. You see the pile of dirty laundry that's sitting there. You see tasks you have to do. People who have kids, are distracted by their kids. Remember during COVID, schools were closed and kids had to be at home, and that was very trying for a lot of people. Another difference is that people report different kinds of motivation that's required for doing work. So when people go to the workplace, or if you're a college student and you go into the classroom, you're around other people, and people give all kinds of social signals that they're working, that they're motivated to work. And this helps motivate every individual when they're, when they have all these signals, seeing other people busy at work. But when people are at home, they miss out on those signals, right? And so people have reported that, they have to come up with other ways to self-motivate. They're not used to self-motivating like that. And so, people have different strategies. Some people are not very successful at motivating themselves. So that's a big change as well. And then one other very big difference is that when people were in the physical workplace before COVID, many have now returned to the workplace, there is a physical constraint on when you have to be in the workplace. The physical constraint is the time you show up for work, the time that you leave work. So let's say it's 9 to 5. And people have different chronotypes, which means some people are early types, they like to wake up early. Some people are late types, they like to sleep in. But it didn't matter what your personal chronotype was, you had to be in the workplace from 9 to 5. Students taking classes, right? You have particular class times. You have to show up at those times, right? And, during COVID, this is more for information workers than it is for students. People would revert back to their chronotypes. So someone who's an early person, they could start work at 6 o'clock in the morning and they'd be finished early in the day. And their colleagues might be late types. Maybe someone doesn't start working until noon. And then there's very little overlap between colleagues. So this was sometimes this would lead to disagreements among colleagues. So this was another difference. For many people who are working at home, their day extended because they had to take care of personal responsibilities like kids or other household duties. And so they ended up working longer hours, and the line between work life and personal life became very blurry. So these are some differences.
Okay. With talking about working and being in the workplace and having personal devices and professional devices, in your book, you talk a lot about multitasking and how it affects us. So I wanted us to talk a little bit about that. Do you think it's toxic? I know that there is changes that occur when you're multitasking because your brain has to rearrange to and takes a little bit of time to do that because we're not robots, and unfortunately. So what do you think about multitasking? Is it in the end, is it really productive, or maybe not?
No, it's not productive. First of all, let's talk about what we mean by multitasking. It does not mean doing two things in parallel unless one of those things is automatic. So you can walk and text because walking is automatic, right? But as soon as someone on a bicycle cuts across you, it's no longer automatic. You have to pay attention to your walking. But imagine that you have multiple tasks that you have to do. What you're actually doing is shifting your attention very rapidly between the two tasks. And we don't do any of those tasks really well when we're shifting our attention. It's like trying to be on a Zoom call where you really are supposed to pay attention. Right? Or let's say you have a class that's on Zoom and you're supposed to pay attention, but instead you're doing your email or you're trying to write a paper. Okay. You're not doing both of those things effectively. Your attention might be every so often on the Zoom call, and then you move your attention away and start writing that paper. So we don't do either one very well. It takes longer to do any single task when we're switching between them. It's called a switch cost, because every time we change our attention to something new, it takes time for our minds to reorient to that new task. We also make more errors when we multitask, and this has been shown in many, many experiments. And it increases stress. People are more stressed. And there are studies that show that our blood pressure rises when we're switching our attention very rapidly. And there's other measures as well that indicate that people are stressed. So overall, we think we're doing more, but we're actually doing less.
Hey, then I wanted to talk a little bit about Gen Z and attention span and maybe ideas that everybody have that maybe are true and maybe some aren't. So being a teenager who grew up with the coming of new technologies and social media, quite frankly, sometimes it is hard for me to sit in front of a 2.5 hour movie without getting distracted or wanting to pick up my phone and scroll and kind of be a cliche of my generation. So it's very common to hear people say that Gen Z is the most affected generation of this. But in your book, you say that a lot of people are affected in the workplace already
Yeah.
by attention loss, basically. So what do you think about that? Is it really specifically something proper to our generation, or is it different for everybody, but in the same span, really?
Well, it affects everybody. Everybody is affected. Now Gen Z does use a lot more social media than people of other generations. And so, we talked just before about the constraints, the time constraints that social media puts on our attention, because we tend to get information in short chunks or snippets. So yes, the fact that Gen Z spends more time on social media compared to other generations and more time exposed to shorter chunks of information. Yes, that's affecting their generation. But it affects everybody, right? Everybody is, when people are in the workplace, they have to deal with a lot of emails. And this is very commonplace. And we found people check their email on average 77 times a day. That's a lot. Now, Gen Zers, the email is not necessarily the main technology they use. They do texting, they do a lot of other things. So it's different kinds of technology that's being used in different generations, but these different kinds of technologies are affecting people similarly in the sense that it's causing our attention to shift very rapidly.
And with talking about emails, I read that emails are pretty toxic because in the workplace, I think you talked about an experiment that was made where in a certain workplace you got rid of email for about a week or so, and that bosses who usually would put a lot of extra work on their employees would not do it so much because they would have to actually get up, get out of the office, and go talk to the person. And so emails are just so rapid that they cause actually a lot of stress, especially to employees and people in the workplace.
That's right. It's very easy to delegate work through email. It's very easy to ask for favors from people, like send me this information or ask questions to people. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to go up and talk to someone face to face. First of all, you have to put in the effort to walk over to someone's office to ask them for this information or to delegate work. And then it's, socially, it's just very easier, much more easy to simply send someone an email to ask a favor than to, have to walk up and ask someone. And some people might, depending on personalities, might be harder for some people to ask favors in person compared to others.
Yeah, also I wanted to talk about something that you call automatic processing. So in chapter 2, you talk about this phenomenon Could you explain a little bit for our listeners what is automatic processing? Because I think that
Right.
would be really interesting.
So automatic processing is when we can't help but pay attention to something. So we can think of two kinds of processing. There's controlled processing, which means we are in control of where we place our attention. So if we want to read something, right, we have the capacity to put our attention where we want to put it. When it's automatic, we're responding to different stimuli in the environment, and we can't help but respond. So you have a notification that comes on your computer screen, and you respond to it without thinking. You click on it, right? That's an example of automatic processing. Or we have our smartphone next to us, and we don't even think about it, but we pick up our smartphone and we swipe it open. That's an example of automatic processing. So, it's responding to things in the environment. It's called a bottom-up kind of response. And it's hard to stop doing that, right? It's hard to repress this urge to respond to something.
Yeah, that was actually my next question. Should we deconstruct these patterns and habits, such as texting, you use that as an example, how texting has become automatic for everybody, whereas maybe 50 years ago, typing on a computer was something that not everybody could do automatically. And so should we deconstruct these patterns? And if yes, how? Because I don't honestly don't know how to keep myself from looking at a notification that I get on my phone because it's become something that is so natural to me.
That's right. We've done it so much, right? We can't help but do it. And a feature of automatic processing is when we do something a lot, right? We do it over and over again, so we become really good at it, right? And then it becomes automatic. So texting, texting is interesting because it's not quite automatic because we have to put a little bit of effort into texting, but it's easy. It's not a lot of effort, but it's different than clicking on a social media notification, right? That's really effortless and it's fast. So there is a bit of a difference there, right? There are things we do with controlled processing that are difficult, like when you're struggling to read an article, say for a class. But there are also things with controlled processing that are easier to do. Watching a YouTube video is pretty easy, right? We have to give some amount of attention, not a lot, but and it doesn't require that much effort, but we're putting that effort in to watch that YouTube. We're putting a little bit of effort in when we text.
Okay. Yes, and then I wanted to talk about another phenomenon, another idea that you talk about in your book. That's the attentional pool.
We have a limited pool of
Yes.
cognitive resources. So I like to use the metaphor of a tank, like a fuel tank. So, if you have a really good night's sleep, which I know for college students is pretty rare, but if you can get a really good night's sleep, you will start your day with a full tank of cognitive resources. You can also think of it as attentional resources or attentional capacity. And things we do throughout the day drain that tank, right? We use resources when we're doing something difficult, like reading, or when we're multitasking. That drains our tank. Stress drains our tank. And so it's really important when you're starting to feel fatigued to be able to pull back and let that tank of resources replenish, right? Because it's limited, right? We don't have an infinite amount of attentional capacity. And so, how do we replenish? Well, the best thing is to take a nice break. And, actually the best thing of all is take a walk in nature. And that's been proven to de-stress us and, helps us replenish. I realize it's not always easy to go out in nature, especially if you're in an environment like in Montreal where it might be cold in the winter. You can't always go outside. So you can also move around. You can have a conversation with someone. Meditate, contemplate. There's a lot of things that we can do to just kind of pull back and let those cognitive resources replenish. So essentially, you want to take a break. You don't want to work straight through to exhaustion and let your fuel tank run empty because you will experience repercussions, which is, exhaustion and burnout. And that's not good.
In that idea, since we have limited attention, should we rethink our work structures? Like maybe the classic, there's been debates going around that maybe the classic 9 to 5 is not the best way. Maybe if we worked in a shorter amount of time, but in a more productive way, we would have better results in the end.
I think that's right. So there's a push that we have to focus as long as possible. If we're working 9 to 5, we should be focusing the entire day. You take a lunch break, but otherwise you should be focused. I really think that's the wrong model to use because we have this limited attentional capacity, and the way that we can be more productive is to not let ourselves get exhausted, to preserve those resources. And so as soon as we start to feel fatigued, it's time to step back, take a break. And so this traditional structure of 9 to 5, it's not really designed to allow us to take these really good, significant breaks. And I think it's very, very important that we build into a work structure, time for breaks, right? Because when people are not exhausted, when they can feel more positive, then they actually can be more productive, right? And probably everyone, you all know this intuitively, that when you feel refreshed, you have more ideas, you can be more creative, you can work harder, you have more energy, more motivation, and contrast that with just working yourself through to the bone, right? And you're just really exhausted, and we're just not going to do our best.
And then I also wanted to talk about AI and our brains getting kind of lazy. So you talk about AI and the effect it has on us in chapter 7 of your book. But with the rise of AI, especially now, our brains will most likely be able to delegate more and so exercise less in a way. And in your opinion, is this phenomenon bound to get worse in the future with the new arrivals of new tools such as ChatGPT, for example, that has completely already changed a lot of things?
Yeah. So, AI, ChatGPT, enables us to produce more information, right? So you can imagine people can get reports written through ChatGPT, lot of different things written. But ultimately, the mind is a bottleneck. So human beings have a limited capacity to process information. And so, even though we're producing more and more information, the amount of information that humans can actually take in and process is limited. That's not getting greater, right? And so, there is this basic paradox in that we'll be producing more information, but our ability to take in information is not changing. So there is that. You talked about the lazy mind. People do gravitate toward the path of least resistance. There's a lot of research that shows this, that people, if we have a choice of two different things, we tend to choose those things that are easiest. And for example, there was a very nice study done which showed that, people have a natural walking rhythm, right? It's our own personal rhythm of walking. We're used to it. But if people were given an opportunity to walk a different path that was easier, they did so, just even though it meant giving up your personal rhythm of what you're used to. People tend to use what's called cognitive heuristics for making judgments. Instead of doing complex, difficult reasoning, we take shorthand approaches, and we use heuristics to make decisions. So there's a lot of instances of that illustrate how our minds are lazy. AI is, in my view, is going to leverage the idea that people's minds are lazy. And if people rely on AI to do things, and we'll probably rely more and more on AI to be doing tasks that we simply don't want to do because they're hard to do. We don't have motivation to do them. I believe it's going to make our minds become even more lazy. There's something to be said. Let's talk about writing. There's something to be said about writing yourself, compose it. Let's say it's an essay. Composing an essay yourself, right? It requires thought, right? Some amount of deep thought to put into writing that essay. And if we simply farm it off onto ChatGPT, we lose that opportunity to engage in deep thought. And so I think that, this is a potential problem. If we rely more and more on AI, we're using less and less of our own cognitive processing, our own capacity for doing deep thought. The counter argument is, yeah, let AI do the boring stuff, and this leaves time for people to do the difficult things that require deep thought. I am not sure that people would do it because I just don't think that it's in our nature to want to do those kinds of things. So I would much rather that we rely less on ChatGPT.
Altogether. Okay, and finally, I just wanted to talk about the future of attention, which is you talk about in chapter 14. How do you see the future and our relationship with devices, technologies, the way our attention span will grow or not? Or decline? Do you think as a whole, as a society, we'll be able to recognize that there is a need for regulation, or on the contrary, it will only get worse?
Well, I am an optimist, and this is based on other historical trends where people had, doomsday scenarios, and it turns out that things weren't as bad as people thought. I think that society, on the whole, has a tendency to self-correct, and I am hoping that's the case with respect to our attention. We already see lots of technologies being developed that can help us process this huge amount of information that we're faced with. And we're seeing technologies that can help people focus better and be less distracted. What example is the idea of a personal digital assistant? So a smart assistant that can coach us and help us understand how we can best pay attention. I would love to see that. I would love to have my own personal intelligent assistant, not to do the work for me, but rather to guide me and teach me how I can better manage my attention. Because ultimately, it's about people gaining agency, their own agency over their own attention. If we simply farm off all the work to AI, right, we're not going to gain agency to be able to do things ourselves. And I really think, we're humans. We have the capacity for original thought, for being creative. And, I would like us to optimize that and use our abilities in the best way that we can. And I do think that there will be technology solutions that can help us do that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming here and chatting with us. And I think that's it.
Okay, thank you
Thank
for having
you.
me.
Yes, thank you.